Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is a personal trainer, a fitness guru, I would say, and she's also a nutritionalist, which I've really practiced saying that word because it's very hard to say. It's Chloe Madeley. Hello.
Hi. I really hate to burst your bubble.
What?
It's nutritionist, not nutritionalist.
Oh my, that's why it's so hard, because I've put another blooming thingity bob in it. Nutritionist, not nutritionalist. Well, that, you know what? That makes
you.
My life a lot better, actually.
This is why everyone loves you so much. That was brilliant. That was brilliant.
And well, this will be the clip that's played out the night before this airs as well. So this is how it's going to be introduced. It's how it's going to be started.
Good. And a really hard word to say. Says completely non-existent word. It's like, well done. That's amazing.
You can tell I don't have one. All right, I don't have a nutritionist because I've obviously been looking for a nutritionalist.
Yeah, nobody needs one, to be honest. It's all very commonsensical, common knowledge. Dietitians, on the other hand, they're real diet doctors, and I am not one of those.
But also, I didn't say, you are now a mother of a one-year-old.
Yeah, my little baby girl. She's 13 months old, and she is the absolute joy of my life. She's just joyful. And saying to James last night, like, I really want to have another baby because I really want to have this experience again.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I have this weird thing of like, I don't know that I can split my love or find more love. It feels very strange. I wanted to talk to you about this because do you have three kids?
Well, I've got three, all boys, three.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about that.
I can remember when Buzz was, he must have been about 11 months old. We were getting in the lift in a hotel. Someone got into the lift with us and she just turned around and she said to me, you know, you think you can't love another child in the same way, but actually when you have another, your heart just grows. So yeah. It's not like it's been split. It's just that there's even more love there, which...
Well, that just makes me want to do it again because I'm one of those people that like, this sounds kind of awful, but I need to love someone or something. I'm that really annoying girl that always had a boyfriend and was never just like casually dating or like in a really like not serious relationship. Like I was in love. We'd been together for years. Like my first relationship, I was 16 to 21. Like, and it was like that my whole life till I met James. So then when I had my daughter, I was like, finally, I just have this funnel of like love, but then everyone's like, yeah, but wait till she's a teenager and then they break your heart every day. And I'm like, don't say that.
But all I keep hearing about all these phases that they go through is that, but then they come back.
Yeah.
They'll always come back. And I think, if you look at you and your parents, you always come back. Doesn't matter what happens throughout the years, you always go back. So that's what I'm sort of clinging on to.
Yeah.
You know, because apparently I'm going to lose the boys very soon and they're going to come back at some stage. So
yeah, and, but you know what? I would say that's completely true. My family now, I'm the youngest at 36. There's four of us kids and then my mum and dad. We are so much closer. We're more close now than we've ever been, all of us, yeah, in our whole lives, including our childhood. Obviously, we were more dependent on our parents then. But in terms of like love and bond and closeness, it's peaking now and hopefully will continue to. So I completely back that.
Well, and also you've had an amazing experience, which is something that I had last year, where you've been filming a TV show with your family. And I think from my experience, because we went back to Italy to go to where my dad grew up, me and my siblings, with my dad. And that just meant that because you're filming together, you're with each other every day in a way that you're not normally together. And it feels like a right, almost indulgence, because you're a bit like, when would we ever get this chance to be together like this?
No, it's really interesting. I was really pleasantly surprised when I told my mum and dad about the show and my brother as well, because he's a very brilliant agent at a very brilliant agency in London. And we were all sat having lunch and I said, listen, and I told them that the production company and ITV wanted to do the show with me. And I was expecting all of them to be like, oh, don't do that. Oh, that's going to be awful. Like, absolutely turn that down. And they were like, oh my God, you've got to do it. You're going to have like a whole photo album on camera of Bodhi's first year of her life. Yeah. And you're going to reach so many more women. And what I do is very basically a female kind of health and fitness, strength and fitness, physique and health coach. And I already have a huge and amazing client roster base. They were like, you'll reach so many more women and you'd be an idiot not to. And you should absolutely do it. So obviously, as soon as they said that, I was like, okay, well, I completely value their opinion above all else. And I'm so shocked by it that I said yes. And it was actually really nice because James has spent the whole summer traveling to Ibiza, Monaco, Dubai, Miami, New York, like everywhere DJing. So it's actually been really nice to kind of have a real reason to kind of force him to come spend some time with me as well in the week. Like, well, you've got to come back, you've got to film. He's like, yeah, all right, fine. Because it's really hard, like flying back and forth to different countries all week, every week. So it's kind of forced him to come back. And because you're on camera, yes, it absolutely is what you see is what you get. But sometimes they have to think of fun things for you guys to do. So we had a few very fun experiences together as a family that I don't think we would have had we not been filming the show. So that was really fun.
I love that. When is it out and what's it called?
So October the 9th, it's called Chloe Madeley, A Family Affair. And then it comes out every Monday thereafter. I don't know the time yet. I have no idea.
Have you finished filming now?
Yes and no. We still have to do pickups. So there's loads of likes for the master interviews because you never know what's going to make it into the edit and what's not. And we film like 5-6 days a week. And it was full on. Like, it's exhausting. I've never had so much respect for reality TV people in my life.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your bare face on camera. All right.
Thanks, babe. You got it right now.
Here she is. Right. Tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up? What was it like?
So I was born and raised in Manchester, which I'm so proud of. I'm a Manc till I die. My parents are Richard Madeley and Judy Finnegan, which I, the younger generations probably have no idea who those people are. The older generations probably do.
It's bizarre to me that they're a whole generation that like don't know that.
I know.
You know what I mean? They're like, they are icons.
One of my young clients, she must be 21, said to me the other day, like, oh, I didn't know Richard Madeley was your dad. And I was like, I'm so happy. That is the best sentence I've ever heard. They basically started this morning, for those that don't know. And I think because they were married and I was a newborn when they started it and Jack was, how old was he? 14 months. And then my mum had two kids from her previous marriage, Tom and Dan, who were 10 at the time. Or 11. And I think because it was this like real family vibe, real family show, it was the first ever magazine show on UK television. It flew and they became household names. And by the time I was 8 or 9, Granada and ITV mutually decided that the show had to move to London because they just couldn't get guests down to Liverpool. It was filmed on the Albert Dock in Liverpool. You know, Tom Cruise would fly into London, do press in London all day. Be like, do you want to go to Liverpool at 5 o'clock in the morning? And you'd be like, absolutely not. I need to fly back to LA. So they moved the whole show to London. I obviously moved too. And I've been living in Northwest London ever since. And yeah.
Can you remember what it was like to move at that age?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I mean, so my mum, you know, talk about it from like my parents' perspective. My dad was fine. My dad's really adaptable. He's like a happy puppy. He just honestly is like Mr. Positive, like really matter of fact, always sees the good in everything. So he was fine. And he's from Essex. So it wasn't a problem for him coming back south. My mum is like a through and through solid northerner. And I think she really struggled, so much so I even think she had quite a bad spell with her mental health when we moved. And I think she felt intensely, overwhelmingly guilty for years about leaving. And there was, I mean, I won't say who, there was a certain Northern celebrity who gave her a really hard time of it, which I thought was really cruel. It really stung. It really hurt her. My brothers were absolutely livid. I mean, really, really upset. The older ones specifically.
They would have been late teens by that point, right? Or even early 20s. So their lives were set.
Yeah, they're at uni. Yeah. So it was weird because then their base was now London, but they were still at uni in Manchester. They wanted to stay very much in Manchester. One of them ended up staying in Manchester. And so, yeah, it was really hard on the family. I was kind of like, oh, this is an adventure. Let's see what happens. I was really quite young, you know, nine's still quite young, especially me. I was a young child. I was very much like, I don't know, my mum and dad were like my world until I was, I would say 13, you know, when you started to get more of a quote unquote social life. And then I came to London and everyone took the mickey out of me because I had a Northern accent and I made no friends. And then I was like livid. But then I took up football and then I was really good at it. And then everyone liked me. So sports, guys, it makes you friends. So
I feel like sports and music, they're the two things that you can really gel with people over. You know, I think in a family, if you're playing sport or if you're playing music as well, it's a great, it's a great thing.
100%, 100%.
Your mum and dad have been on this podcast and they were delight. Honestly, I had the best time with them. They were amazing. You've got a lot to live up to. Yeah. But one thing that your mum said actually was that you can only ever be as happy as your unhappiest child. And it's so true. Like, as my kids get older, I see that even more so because the problems, you just want to be able to fix them all the time. And actually, I imagine that even when you kids were younger, like that idea of having to move, the idea of people coming over and maybe encroaching on your family time because of what they chose to do as a profession, but it's a hard mix of emotions to be feeling.
Yeah, I think mum always had a lot of guilt. Mum's a guilty person. You know, she's an anxious person. She's a worry bag, as she calls it. And I think when she got her first divorce from my brother's father, I think she's always, still to this day, struggled with guilt.
Yeah.
I think when we moved, she really struggled with guilt. And I think there were times when I really messed up growing up. And because they were in the public eye, that was very public. Mm. And my mum was riddled with guilt. When I messed up, when I made mistakes, she'd call me crying, saying sorry to me, because I don't know, it's on the front page of the Daily Mail or whatever.
But that's because you are, you know, a young adult, you're growing up, you're learning, and other young adults will be able to go out and make those mistakes, not really go beyond their friendship group. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. She's just the kindest soul. Her children are everything. My brother and I recently contributed to a Channel 5 documentary on their life. They said, how do you think your parents want to be remembered? Like, and me and my brother, like, dad wants to be remembered as a journalist because he is. And I think a lot of people take the mick out of my dad, but they don't realize that how informed he is, how much of a journalist by trade he is. He's one of the youngest newspaper editors of a local paper, if not the, in history in the UK. My mum, probably not remembered by many, but remembered by her family as mum, because that's her. And it's really interesting.
At a younger age, did you ever look ahead to the future and see yourself with your own family? Because family is obviously such a massive part of your life anyway.
No, I was kind of internally focused on my family, my mum, my dad, my brother and I. For ages, I was never that like 15-year-old, 16-year-old, like, oh my God, I can't wait to get married and have a family. Like, that wasn't me. And then I wanted to travel. I just wanted to travel. And I did a lot. And I didn't think I wanted kids when I found what I do now. I became very good at my job. Obviously, I've been doing it for 12 years now. I have a lot of qualifications and I have a lot of experience and I love it.
You've got a real passion. I think as an outsider watching you, you know, I feel like it definitely feels like you found your place. You found the thing that gives you the drive. You're so passionate about it. And it's incredible to watch, you know, your podcast and everything that you do about it. It's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I love it. It's definitely my thing. And I started doing really well with it in loads of different areas. Yeah, books, podcasts, the online coaching, the face-to-face. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I had James and I love to travel. Then he retired from rugby and we became like party people. And I was like, I just don't think I want kids. And then I thought I couldn't have kids and that changed everything. And I'm so happy that it did because, you know, you hear a lot of women be like, I kind of regret having kids, you know, and they say it very quietly. It's not public, obviously. But, you know, if you know enough mums, you've heard one or two people say, I kind of regret doing it, to be honest. I didn't think it would be like how it is. And I don't know, and I don't want to be too presumptuous, but potentially that's people who are like, who think that having kids is going to be the best thing they've ever done. And then when it happens, they're like, oh, it's great, but it's not the best thing I've ever done, which is fair enough. For me, I spent a lot of my third trimester worrying that I'd made the wrong decision because I loved my life. Like, I loved my life pre-Bodhi. And oh my gosh, from the second they showed her to me to this very day, I am like, hands down, without a doubt, best thing in my life, best thing that's happened to me, would do it. The second she was born, I thought, I want to do this every day. I want to do it every day. I was just like, this is the best thing in the world. And I don't know why, but I very surprisingly just took to it like a duck to water. Even my mum was like, I'm shocked, like how I just went zoomf and fell into the role of mum, and I love it.
So what created that shift in the first place? Like, what made you think that you couldn't have kids, and how did that kind of make you sort of change your mind on it?
So James and I got married when I was 31. And at 31, I'd been on the pill since I was 16. And my gynecologist was like, you really need to come off the pill now. Come off the pill, come back in a week or whatever, and we'll talk about with contraception. So I was like, okay, fine. We were married. I didn't want kids. We definitely weren't trying to get pregnant. We definitely hadn't had any conversations about it. But I was just like, if I get pregnant, I'll deal with it then.
So had you two never spoken about kids at all? It was just a conversation where you were like,
no, you know you can't get away with that when you're in the public eye. You can't do one interview where they're like, what about kids? When are you going to get married?
And it's yeah.
We talked about it a lot, and we'd always just said like, probably not, maybe. Yeah. But also, because my parents read the papers and stuff, you don't want to say no. Like, no, we don't want kids, because you know your parents are going to read it and call you and be like, crying, what the hell are you talking about? Anyway, so then came off the pill, and if I get pregnant, I'll just deal with it then. Like, I'll figure it out, right? We must have been married for 2 years, 2020. And I just kind of like woke up in the middle of the night, like, I haven't had one pregnancy scare. I haven't, like, what is going on? So once lockdown allowed, went to the gynecologist, and he kind of laughed at me in a way. And he was like, you know, at this point, I was 33. And he said, you're not just going to get pregnant. Like, you have to try, you know, through ovulation period and, you know, all the phases of the menstrual cycle. And then, so we carried on trying, for like a good 6 months, still nothing was happening. And then, so I missed a big bit there. So then I basically went home to my husband and I was like, we need to decide, like, are we having kids or not? And like, at this point, as soon as the choice was taken away from me, I was like, I want to do it. Like, I really want to do it now. And James was like, all right. All right, fine. He's happy we did it now. He's like obsessed with Bodhi. But then he was like, all right, if you want to. So off we went. Nothing happened. Continually panicked. Had all my fertility tests done at that point. And I was fine. He was like, you're textbook fertile. Your hormones, your reproductive system, you're fertile. He was like, every day, but on days you're bleeding, go have sex. And we did. And 2 months later, I got pregnant. And now I have a little nutcase running around my house, which is just brilliant. It's like having, you know, that good feeling you get when you see a Christmas tree. You put the Christmas tree up and you walk into the room like late at night after a long day at work, and you see the tree and you're like, ah. And every day I just have this little kind of mini Christmas tree running around screaming, and I just see her and I'm just like, ah.
I absolutely love that. I love that. And actually, I've heard that advice, actually, you know, the whole just have lots of sex thing.
Just do it. Yeah.
Claudia Winkleman said it to me when, you know, when you go and do a radio interview, and while they're playing the songs, they kind of, you have a little gossip. That was Claudia's big advice. Just have lots of sex and it will happen.
It's true. And it's not the most fun thing in the world. Like, you know, there are days where I just wanted to kill James, because he is not the easiest husband you can find. And I would be like, I'm going to kill. We start to have sex. Just have to, like,
can we just park it for a second?
Yeah.
Just for a few seconds.
Find a mental pathway around it. Fetishize arguing. I don't know. Figure it out.
Can you remember finding out you were pregnant? Did you have any symptoms or anything like that?
I think I kind of knew. So James is in Dubai DJing. He'd already been there for like a week. He was staying out there for another week. For that week that he'd been gone, the full week, I had really sore breasts. They felt really full and really tender. So I was like, oh, my period's coming. And then I suddenly realized, it just dawned on me one morning, like, hang on, I felt like this the day before James flew to Dubai, and he's been in Dubai for a full week. Like, oh my God, where's my period? And then I was like, maybe I'm pregnant. So I took a pregnancy test out of my toiletry bag, but I was on my way to the gym. I had to get to the gym. So it's like, I'll have to go to the gym right now. Got in the car, went to the gym, which is 10 minutes down my road, got out, always do a wee before a workout, top tip. Went to the loo, was like, oh, I'll do the pregnancy test. Did it, put it back in my bag, went upstairs on the gym floor, started my workout, looked at the test and it said I was pregnant. And I was like, obviously I find out I'm pregnant in the gym. Like how cliche like a child's life going to be. She already has a dumbbell rattle. I mean, we're just broing her up for life. And then I was like, oh, I'm pregnant. And then I was like, should I leave the gym? I was like, well, should I carry on training? And I was like, I'll carry on training. So I carried on and I had like a little smile on my face the whole time. And I was like, this is fun. Oh, how am I going to tell everyone? And then came home and waited a few hours and then called James and told him. He ruined it completely. You know, and this is what I do as well. Like I romanticize things in my head and then they don't come to pass how I imagine them to be. And then I'm really angry. But he was like, I can't believe you told me while I'm in Dubai. And I was like, I can't sit on this for a week and not tell you. Like, I have to tell you in case you can't tell, I say too much. So then that happened. And then telling my parents is better. Telling my parents is really good. And my mum and dad, they always sit in front of the TV and they watch the news every night and they eat dinner. I bought a bottle of champagne and I walked in and I put it on the table. And my mum didn't even look up. Like, she hadn't even like noticed that I was there. My dad looked at the champagne and he looked at me and he looked at the champagne and I went, I'm pregnant. And he was like, oh my God. And he got up and he gave me a massive hug. And then I just heard my mum behind me on the sofa going, excuse me, can I have a hug? And I gave her a hug. And yeah, it was really magical. It was really wonderful.
Aww. How was your pregnancy?
Like overall, it was the most body confident I've been. I work in
which is incredible as well. When you think about what you do, like you empower your body so often. You know, I've seen you talking about even exercise and stuff. I think there's been a massive shift over the last decade anyway of people not exercising to punish their body, but exercising because they love exercising. I think there has been a massive shift anyway. But yeah, it's interesting that pregnancy is a thing that made you feel, you know, that power.
I think when you work in health and fitness as a woman, women often project onto you their own insecurities with their bodies. I mean, it happens all the time. It's why as a coach, you can't be a hard-ass coach, like, for example, James Smith is, because women will be like, ugh, I hate her. Like, what a bitch. Do you know what I mean? But you have to be soft and cuddly, whereas male coaches who are like that have huge success. I think doing what I've done, again, for 12 years, it's because of this. I work in the body because I'm fascinated in the science of the body. So obviously getting pregnant was amazing for me. I was like, and journalists would say it to me all the time. They'd be like, are you going to really struggle when you get pregnant? And I'd be like, no, like I work in science. Like I love it. I threw myself into it. I enjoyed it a lot. I had very bad morning sickness, but it stopped in week 14. So I wouldn't go as far as to say it was hyperemesis and I certainly wasn't hospitalised, but it was debilitating. I couldn't get up at all. It was a period of like 8 weeks where I just lay on the sofa every day. It was pretty bad. And then my second trimester, as everyone knows, you know, if you don't have hyperemesis or anything or high-risk pregnancy, was the honeymoon period. Mm-hmm. Loved it. Was like wearing my crop top and my baggy cargo pants like Melanie Black from Also Loving Life, walking around Soho Farmhouse like, yeah, I'm fucking pregnant. Like, loved it. And then my third trimester came and I got really bad iron deficiency anemia and I just started fainting. And it's given me a little bit of, I guess, trauma in that I now have claustrophobia. So it first happened on a plane. I couldn't breathe and we took off and I was heavily pregnant in an air. I think it was like 34 weeks. 32 weeks. Oh, anyway, somewhere in that region. I was heavily pregnant in an aeroplane and we were in the air and James was asleep and I couldn't breathe. And I was like, the panic was overwhelming and I was just staring at him, waiting for him to wake up. And the second he opened his eyes, it was like my brain like just went, oh, it's okay. And I just went shoof and I fainted and I woke up, lay on these seats with an oxygen mask on and all these cabin crew around me and everyone was staring at me. And I was like, oh my God, what happened? But that was really hard because then that kept happening. But apart from that, I did love being pregnant.
And that was simply because of your iron?
Yeah, you can't catch your breath, you can't breathe. And then I just went down and it was fine. It's always fine. And it takes weeks for your iron levels to pick back up as well. And I was so close to labour at that point where they drop again.
Yeah.
It felt like I was really racing to get my iron levels back up. But then I did. And so actually they didn't drop for me postnatally. I stayed nice and level.
Well, that's good. But it was around the same time that your mood sort of dipped as well. You were saying,
Yeah. My third trimester was really tough, psychologically really tough. I think also because James is a DJ now and he's a very successful DJ now. This real success started last summer when I was pregnant in my third trimester. Bodhi was born in August. started in my third trimester. And everyone knows, who knows anything about DJing, knows the summer month is where you travel, and you clean up and you make a lot of money, right? That started for the first time ever in my relationship with James when I was pregnant with my first child in my third trimester with childbirth approaching. And it panicked me.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it was the same this summer, having a little baby, being left on my own every weekend. And he comes back in the week. So like typically Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, he's at home, which is great. But the rest of the week he's off DJing. And the show documents this like at the beginning. And I feel a bit anxious about it, but it's my reality and it's a reality show. So you got to get on with it. But the first, I would say June and July, when we were filming that whole period, was really hard for me and really hard on our relationship. And then we kind of have like a period of adaptation in July, August, and then we kind of find a nice groove, and that's really nice. But it was tough, yeah. And my third trimester was when it really hit, and it was, yeah, put the cat amongst the pigeons a bit in my head.
Well, especially if you've always been able to travel together or to be part of things together, all of a sudden there is that, oh, hold on, our responsibilities are changing, you know, mm-hmm. and actually you're not just going to be able to go off and do that the whole time, you know.
Yeah.
I can definitely relate to that.
You're the first person actually who's ever said that in response, but you suddenly realise that your responsibilities change and now yours is with the child, and the person who you always had these adventures with is now doing it on his own. It is really overwhelming and scary, and you're the only person who's ever put it in that through that lens, and I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah. And I think for any couple, you know, largely mums would be staying at home, you know, even in a traditional setup. I think after a paternity leave ends and that person goes back to doing their 9 to 5, say, and they're not there from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night, you know, that's a massive shift. That person's going out, they're speaking to adults, they're living a lovely life where they get to have a hot cup of tea or maybe a cocktail in James's case, you know, and there does feel like it's a very big, like there's a massive difference between what both of you are living through. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. It's applicable to so many, like you say, mostly women, not all, but mostly women. It's applicable to so many women who become new mothers. And I think definitely a big hurdle. People say it's really hard in the first year and, you know, it's really hard on a marriage and da-da. And you're right. It's because typically the life of the mother changes 100%. Your whole life changes. And the life of the father changes at most 50%. But they retain that life that the woman loses. And it is very hard. I mean, I wasn't resentful. I preferred my new life. I do prefer my new life to his. But it's hard when I'm no longer having those experiences with him. Do you know what I mean? It's been interesting.
Yeah. How did you feel heading towards the birth? Did you have any like grand plans of what you actually wanted?
Oh, come on. We all, those who don't have
I
an
know,
elected
but
C-section.
It's the question.
I was going to be right. I guarantee you, right? Those people who don't have an elective C-section all want the same birth. They want water birth with gas and air, if and only. Absolutely no epidural, and they literally just want to like breathe the baby out. And I feel like I know one person in my whole life who that happened for, which is my sister-in-law. That's literally what happened. She went into labor, got in the pool, like paddled around for a bit, got out of the pool, squatted down, and her baby just fell out of her. And I'm like, I don't know anyone else that's ever happened to, although you can tell me your birth stories in a minute. I obviously was a week overdue, absolutely refused to be induced, which in hindsight, and now I know the statistics, was absolutely stupid of me. But I was on day 6 and they were like, we're going to induce you tomorrow, day 7, if you're still overdue. I was like, oh. And then my waters broke in the night and I was like, oh my God, I knew it. I just had to be patient. And I also just love the fact that I know what it feels like to have your waters break, because I know for so many women it doesn't happen, and I was so excited about it.
But I was waiting for like a Niagara Falls kind of gush. And now I spend the whole time going, is it? Is that it?
But you know, like it doesn't stop until after you give birth, which I didn't realise. So I was like, oh, there we go, that's it. And then I was like, 5 hours later, like, why am I still leaking?
Dripping everywhere.
Yeah. But I loved it. And then I was really excited about having a natural childbirth, by the way. I was a bit scared of it, obviously. But I was excited because, again, I work in the body and I wanted the experience. I just wanted to, and I'm an experienced girl. Anything I haven't done before, I'm like, I want to know what that's like. I mean, I got my water breaking, but that's pretty much all I got, real natural childbirth. 24 hours later, no contractions, nothing. So they had to induce me. They gave me the hormonal drip. And because of the nature of the hormonal drip, basically you don't get a break between the contractions. So it's basically a very stupid idea not to have the epidural. So had the induction, had the epidural, and I just kept being like, as long as it doesn't result in a C-section, it's fine.
Why do you think that was in your head about not having a C-section?
I think a few things. I didn't want to have major abdominal surgery.
Yep.
Period. Also, you are very subtly encouraged, you know, by your hypnobirther, if you went to see a hypnobirther, but even your antenatal person, and everyone I know says the same thing, even if it's very subtle and they're like, look, if you need a C-section, you need a C-section. It's still really heavily laced with, don't let anyone push you into doing anything that you don't want. And I didn't want a C-section because I didn't want heavy abdominal surgery.
Yeah.
Especially with what I do for a living. I think people hear that and they hear aesthetics. Physically, it changes your whole core, but mm-hmm. then so is pregnancy. So it's kind of too late for that. Anyway, obviously, no, the baby wasn't coming. And then my obstetrician told me that she was going to have to go in and give me an emergency C-section, category 2. She said she wanted to get her out in 20 minutes. So it had to be now. So I was like, okay, that's quite serious. And I cried the whole way through the operation. I was livid. I'm very lucky that I lived my trauma then and there in the moment. And then she opened me up and she said, okay, the reason she wasn't coming out vaginally is because she was completely tangled up in the umbilical cord and it was never going to happen. And her heart rate kept dropping.
Yeah.
And that had a lot to do with it as well. And the induction, it was an amalgamation of things. And as soon as she explained the why to me, I was thrilled that my baby was out and she was safe. And then she picked her up and she showed it to me. I've got the photo. And she showed it to me. And I just saw this big, beautiful baby. And I was like, she's mine. And I get to take her home. And I can't believe people only ever do this once. And those were all the thoughts that went through my head. That was it.
Can you remember holding it for the first time?
I can. And I didn't like it because I didn't know this before. When you have a C-section, I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe it's to keep blood going to the head. I don't know. Like a slight decline. And so you're like this. So I was kind of like this. And it's not pleasant. Like
yeah.
You get a bit of a headache and it's pretty uncomfortable. And I had the baby on me and I couldn't really. So I was just like, I don't want this to be my first moment with her. I was like, James, take her. So James had her for the first, I would say, 20 minutes of her life. It had skin on skin. Or no, 45 minutes, I say, skin on skin. Shazia, my obstetrician, stitched me up as soon as I got back into the hospital bed. They gave her to me and then I just had her. Actually, I was really happy in the end that I had a C-section because I stayed in the hospital for 2 days. The midwives taught me everything I needed to know. I had all the help I needed and it was great in the end.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
How did it feel for you, you know, after Bodhi arrived, even being in hospital? Because you hadn't in your head planned to have that C-section. So you wouldn't have had anything with you in terms of like making life easier for yourself and any of that, or prepped mentally
for,
you know, not being able to move around and things.
So the only thing that I, because I took my hospital bag in anyway, as soon as I knew I was being induced and I knew that they didn't know how long it would take, I took my hospital bag. The only thing I didn't have with me was like, you know, you get your postnatal pants.
Yeah.
You have specific C-section ones that are high-waisted, obviously, which I feel like all women would rather have at that point anyway, because you still have your belly, but anyway. And mine were like not for us, they were for natural birth. And so all my pants like digging on my scar and you have to have the pad. And that was the only thing that was like actually practically, and also when you're in pain, quite emotionally, like, hard. But I know it sounds awful and not all women have this experience, but I'm also a big believer, like in today's day and age, I think women are praised a lot for sharing their bad experiences, so much so that nobody wants to share their good experiences because they're scared that people be like, well, it's not like that for everyone. And it's like, well, I know, but that's my experience.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie to you. Like it was a massive, massive wave of love that just, I wouldn't even say wave. It was just like a bubble. It just went shoo. And I was on cloud 9. I just was on cloud. And never felt anything like it. There was a horrible moment in the night where I got up to go to the toilet. I just couldn't walk. It was so painful. Like, it was so painful. And like I say, the C-section scar, but in terms of like post-birth trauma, I didn't have any. I didn't. So yeah, I was lucky, but that was my experience.
Do you think a large part of that is simply the fact that your doctor explained why you needed that emergency C-section?
Absolutely. I think the why in my industry with what I do for a living is the most overlooked. And again, especially on social media, you know, in terms of childbirth as well, it's like a homing beacon of reason in your head. And so if you have that, like a magnet right there, all of your thoughts and feelings and emotions can just kind of come together and sit together in this one cohesive understanding of the situation. I completely agree with you. As soon as she said to me, she was never going to come out vaginally. She's completely tangled up in the umbilical cord. Like, she was all over her, like all around her torso. I was like, okay, it's fine then. Because otherwise the alternative would have been what? Her heart would have stopped beating and I would have lost my baby. And I was like, okay, fine. And I think you're completely right. The women I know who do have post-birth trauma, either one explained to on the way or one explained to after. And that creates this kind of void in your head of there's no reason why this happened to me and I can't get to grips with it. So I do think that's really important.
Yeah. How did it feel leaving the hospital?
Oh, stressful.
It sounds like you had such a nice time there.
Yeah, I wanted to say stressful because the paparazzi for a day thought I was like Kim Kardashian. I was like, do you think I'm Kim Kardashian? Like, why are you here? Like, this, like, come on now. Like, we're kind of moderately in the public eye. Like, we are not that famous to have paparazzi. So that was really, really stressful because she just gave birth. Like, I don't know how Kate Middleton did it. Like, who wants to go stand outside and be photographed after they've given birth? It was really stressful. It was really annoying and it was a heat wave and all I had on me was like baggy pants and tube socks. And so that was very hot and sweaty and stressful trying to get out the door into the car. But coming home with Bodhi was wonderful because we were living with my parents at the time. I was terrified. It was going to be way too stressful, but I loved it. It was such a touch. It was the best way to start the first 4 months of her life.
Well, so my sister actually stayed with us for the first 4 months of her daughter's life, which I absolutely loved. But with you being with your mum and dad, it's that you're their baby to look after as well. And there's so... I saw an amazing video actually on Instagram the other day. It's a woman in bed after giving birth and there's loads of people passing around the newborn and kissing the newborn. And the caption, the writing that goes on top of it is something like, everyone's come to see the baby, but he's come to see his. And she just pans to her dad who's next to her and just holding her hand while everyone else passes over the baby. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Don't that make you want to cry? I'm very emotional today. Oh, yours is so true. I think, you know what, actually, someone said something to me and it proved to be extremely true in the weeks after having a baby. Take the mum food. Take her food. I don't care if even if she's like, no, now it's time to get my pre-baby body back. Fuck it. Take a donut. Because you cannot, the last thing you can even think to do is get up, get food, go to the shop, cook food. Like, absolutely not. So I would say do that. They get enough, you know, baby grow bouquets. I mean, I got like 7. And it was a heat wave. She couldn't wear anything but a nappy. And I was like, I don't know what to do with all of these. I need some food.
Oh, gosh. But you were with your mum and dad for 4 months. That's a lovely chunk of time. So by the time you actually moved out, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think the biggest benefit, everyone's like, oh, that's really nice. You had help. I was like, not really. She's a newborn. Like, it's nice to have be like, can you watch the baby? But with a newborn, you can kind of just take them into the bathroom in their Dockatol, what used to be called a sleepyhead, and have a shower and watch them. Like, I actually found the newborn phase really easy.
Yeah, really.
It's that like, yeah, that middle ground I found hard, like right when they're kind of ready to sleep in their own room and kind of ready to be weaned, but they're just not really quite there yet, like month 4 and 5.
Yeah.
Those are my really, really hard months where I kind of lost the plot a bit. But the great thing about having mum and dad was for my mental health. Every day, every single day, 10 times a day, if not 100 times, my mum would be like, oh my God, you're so good at this. You're such a natural. Look at you. And when somebody is giving you affirmations like that all day, every day, with something you've never done before and is very alien to you, you believe it. Like, you just start believing it. Like, if you tell yourself you're ugly every day, you've got a very small amount of time before you really believe that about yourself. Yeah. To hear someone tell you that you're doing an amazing job and you're such a natural, it just Yeah, I think it's part of the reason why I had such a lovely postnatal experience with my baby. And I didn't really have any kind of big meltdowns or freakouts or anything. Like I say, month 4 and 5 were very hard for me. I was very sleep deprived and absolutely kind of ready for a break, which obviously you don't get. But I had a wonderful newborn experience. I hope I get to do it all again. I don't know, I'm 36 now. So I'm like, I hope. Fingers crossed.
Also, 36, I think you're fine to have more babies. I know people that are far older.
Who's your youngest? What's his name?
Max, he is 5. I am 38, so I had him at 33. But Emma Willis had her youngest at 40.
That's true. I did know that as well. And my mum had me at 40.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping. But I'm not ready to do it yet. So I'm like, oh God, I better get going if I want another one. And then I'm like, no, I don't want to have another one yet.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because you're like, the whole, once you get to certain points, I can remember Buzz being 6 months old, me being like, oh my God, like people would have had babies at this, like we know people who had this age gap, you know, and just like, whoa. Yeah. You'd have to go
Irish
now.
Twins.
Yes.
One of my best friends has a little boy. The week that he turned one, she had her twins.
Yeah.
So she had 3 under, basically under one. It's like,
God.
Horrific.
Oh my God.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, these things happen.
Oops. Now we have 3. Going from 1 to 3 is like,
that's quite a jump within a year. You did breastfeed, didn't you? Mm-hmm. What was your journey like with that?
Something which I don't love to talk about because I think people get really upset about it. I was completely ready and willing to accept that my breastfeeding journey would start and end very quickly because for everybody but one of my friends, that's what happened.
Yeah.
They just found it really hard, really painful. Not enough milk came in. I was extremely lucky. Combi fed Bodhi from the beginning. I always gave her bottle or formula in the evenings and at night and then fed in the mornings and throughout the day. And my milk came in on 3. A lot of milk came in, especially in my right boob. This one was packing like, I don't even know how much, a lot. And this one was packing like 90 milliliters if I was lucky. But this won't be enough to even feed her milk now, but I stopped, obviously. And I loved it. I found it really easy. I had no issues getting my boob out in public and feeding her. Obviously, anyone who follows me on Instagram would be like, shock. don't care. Just absolutely, I'm not remotely like insecure or like squeamish or weird about the body. I see the body as like I say, science, fascinating. So I posted a photo the other day and everyone was like, why do you need to post this? And I was like, I don't care that you're offended by skin, like it's not my problem. Anyway, back to my breastfeeding thing. So I would just get my boob out all over the place, like fed her, loved it. And then at 6 months she started to get teeth and I was like, no, absolutely. on a plane on the way back from Miami and she bit my nipple. She just went hum, and I was like, oh, and I was like, that's it, no more. And I just stopped immediately.
Immediately.
I was like, nope, not doing this again. And I thought it was going to be like a whole thing where I'd have to do loads of pumping and like loads of massaging. It wasn't. I kind of pumped them as little as I, you know, when I only absolutely had to just to get some relief and then tried not to the rest of the time. Really, it was only really bad in the morning. And I'd wake up in the pain and there'd be milk everywhere. Yeah. But apart from that, I just kind of really, it's quite common sense, I think, just really easily kind of just came away from it. And she still, though, this morning, she latched onto my boob. I walk around my house naked. And she's got loads of teeth now. And I walk around my house naked and I was doing something on the countertop and it just plonked her down in front of me. And she just went, hum. And I was like, no. I was like, absolutely not. Get off
it's
me.
It's so funny, though, that she's still got the memory of that's what we used to do with those.
Oh, if she sees my nipple, she's like this. It literally like runs into me and I'm like, no, absolutely, because she's still teething really badly now and I'm just like, this is not going to be fun for me.
Oh, that was always my big thing, is my initial plan was to go to 6 months or until they had teeth. And then it took so long for us actually to get into a rhythm with it. Buzz and Buddy never bit me, but the third, he used to have a little, I used to be like, that horrible pain.
But it's also like the fear, the anticipation of it. Like, it's not fun. You're like, they're completely tensed up. Like, oh my God, it goes from being really nice and sweet to, awful. But I'm really lucky. I would say I'm one of now 3 people I know, and like all my friends have kids now. And I reckon I'm one of 3 who had success with breastfeeding. So I just want to say that if you don't, that's absolutely fine. And like I say, Bodhi had a bottle as well from the beginning, and I would have been fine. I'm happy I had the experience. I wouldn't have been heartbroken if I had to stop breastfeeding.
No.
I don't think. I mean, I don't know. People probably listening are like, well, easy for you to say, you never had to. And that's a completely fair argument. But I was always happy to give her a bottle, in a way happier, because I knew that she'd get fuller quicker and sleep better.
I think it's such a shame that so many of us now feel like we have to caveat everything that we say to make sure that we're being inclusive and making sure that people don't worry about. Mm. I do feel like that's one thing about this podcast, is that we kind of want to go, look, whatever works for you, great. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But let's just share our experiences and do that freely without feeling like we're going to offend someone.
I know.
Yeah. I imagine that because of what you do, and you would have helped so many women postnatally before in your work, were you quite fascinated and excited to be starting your own postpartum journey?
Yeah, definitely. As soon as I got pregnant, I started my pre and postnatal qualifications because I was really excited that something that I was really actively going through, I could go through with my clients and coach them at the same time. I felt like I would be a step ahead of my game, and then I would also be able to help my clients. And I was really excited. I was nervous about the C-section because that's 8 layers of tissue, and that takes, you know, up to a year for every single layer to fully heal. I was nervous that I had this new element of it. You know, everyone talks about like the C-section pouch and the C-section overhang. So I was just really proactive about it. I started seeing a women's health physio in my third trimester. And then 2 weeks postnatally, I went in and started having scar treatment done, which got progressively more and more kind of aggressive, I would say, to stop that from happening. And that was wonderful. And I was just really on top of getting my physio nailed, my pelvic floor, my core strengthening back. And I couldn't even engage my core for like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, having Bodhi and doing what I do for a living. That was quite terrifying. I couldn't do this automatic thing, the central nervous system thing that I'd always been able to do, was so out of reach. And I would cry because it was so frustrating and strange that all of a sudden I couldn't do this thing anymore. I reckon I was 16 weeks postnatal until my physio told me that I could lift weights again. Proper weights, not baby weights. It was the best. And then I would say the next 4 months was very much like, okay, how am I going to get to the gym? Because with a baby, that's like not easy. How am I going to get to the gym? And then from there, it was like when that ball was rolling, because motivation breeds motivation. And people are always like, how do I get motivated to go to the gym? It's like, you start going and then the ball is rolling. And then from there, I was like, okay, now I feel like I can sort my diet out. Whereas before, I was like, fuck that. Like, I just had a baby. Like, I do not care about my diet right now. And then I started to sort my diet out. And then I would say 8 or 9 months postpartum, I was amazed actually at how my body had gone back to where it was. But that's because, and again, I don't want people listening to be like, well, it's because I put in the work in terms of the knowledge of what was happening to my body and what I needed to do after. And I put in the work in terms of my physio, and I put in the work in terms of progressively grading my training. And then I put in the work, my dietary intake again. I think I wanted to prove to myself that I could get back to kind of a physique-y look, which is my look. And now I've actually kind of, I don't look like that at the moment, I'm not particularly lean. I'm sitting about 4 kgs heavier than that. But I think I just needed to prove to myself that I could still do it.
I love that. And has it informed your work with your clients in terms of, you know, having had that experience now yourself as well? It's got to have an impact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say more often than not, women are chomping at the bit. I mean, they've had a baby 2 weeks ago and they're like, hey, I'm ready to get on the exercise bike. And I'm like, no, you are not ready to get on the exercise bike. Like, oh, I went for a great run today. And I'm like, no, you should not. Or like, I had one of my postnatal clients recently say to me that she wants to book a photo shoot. And she's like, 4 weeks postnatal. I was like, and she's a real physique client. And I was like, no, it is way too soon mentally, not even physically, mentally, to even put a goal like that on yourself. You just had a baby. This is a big transition in your head. You know, you're so tired and kind of spun out. You can't even figure out what your priorities list is that day. Like, you can't even put it together. So putting that big goal like that on yourself that early on is just a big mistake. So yeah, it's definitely really helped me. And then in terms of physicality, yeah, teaching clients how to engage their pelvic floor, how to engage their core, even if they're nowhere near postnatal or antenatal, every woman should be doing it. So it has been hugely helpful.
I think it goes back to what we were saying before about how much your life changes as well. You know, so many of us just want to go back to what we were doing before, you know, back to let's find me. And I know friends sort of who have that mentality with work as well and take on it before getting there, kind of go, nope, that's fine. 4 weeks later, I'm going to be back doing a show. Are you though? Are you? But you can't say that. And actually, I think it's only once people are there and in that place that maybe they'll view it a little bit differently, because also we don't know what your recovery is going to be like until you're there. You know, you don't know how you're going to feel emotionally until you're there. Yeah, it's really, it's a difficult place to be, I would say.
Yeah, it is. And I learned, you know, firsthand, I did an interview about this and the press made it out to be this like ridiculous story that it wasn't. But, you know, I'm very financially independent and I'm also very prideful, I think, in that sense, probably because of being my parents' daughter and the judgment that's gone along with that. I want to make my own money and I want to stand on my own 2 feet. And that includes in my marriage. So 8 weeks postnatally, I was like, well, I haven't made any money in 16 weeks. Oh my God, what am I doing? There's no excuse for this. And I went back to work and oh, in hindsight, how stupid that was. And that was 8 weeks postnatally. And the thing is, I was lucky enough, I am lucky enough in that I could have just been like, no, I'm going to lean on my husband for a period of time and that's okay. And that was an option. And I wish I'd taken it. And I think it is that pride, whether it's pride in your body, pride in your work, pride in, I don't know, your sense of self. Like you do still have it postnatally, but you do actually lose the ability to pull it off like you once did. It's actually, yeah, jumping the gun can actually be really, I think, damaging psychologically.
I totally agree. And actually, I saw that when I was doing my deep dive research, but then I also saw your response to it. And I felt it was so sad, actually, that you were actually raising a really important issue that so many women face, but that it had been turned into something completely different that then James got a load of abuse over.
Yeah. But this is what happens when you do like print press, which I'm doing obviously at the moment for the show. Everything you say, they make you sound like a psycho, like a weirdo. And I hate it because they just make me look mental. I am slightly mental, but at least when we're doing it like in a podcast or on TV, you have all this context. It kind of makes sense. Like, even if like, you know, you don't like someone, at least you can kind of understand what they're saying. Whereas like in print media, it's just awful. And I read that back and I was like, here we go. And both James and I just got flooded with messages. And I was like, oh, for God's sake, it's just so annoying.
I agree. So if you could write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to and what would you say?
If I could write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to and what would it say? It would be to Bodhi, obviously, because, you know, once you have a baby, you just go into this very strange, morbid, what if I die mindset. Maybe that's just me, but I think about my own mortality every day now. And I just want her to know how much I love her and how much she's changed my life. And I would also like to leave with the letter a mixtape of all the songs that I listened to that make me think of her, which are all over my Instagram page. My Instagram page is just basically a mixtape dedication to Bodhi.
I absolutely love this. It's like every single thing that you post of her, there is a new song. It's a new song. So we finished the podcast with you completing three sentences. The first one is, being a mum means...
everything to me, literally. I mean, I know that sounds like a really cliche sentence, but it is everything to me. It's my number one priority in life and the best thing I've ever done and will be the last thing I think about when I die. There you go. It's like mortality again.
Wasn't expecting that at all. Mortality is definitely something that's really, like, have you always thought about it or is it literally since becoming a mum?
No, since becoming a mum, I think about it all the time. Like, what if I die? Like, do you know, I don't think it helped that my best friend said to me a few weeks after she was born, and don't worry about dying when she's this age, because when she's this age, she won't remember you. I was like, what a weird and awful thing to say to me. But I realised in the context of her life, she's got 2 7-year-olds. And I think what she meant was, now I'm terrified that if something happened to the dad and I, they'd be aware of it. But you're really lucky because your newborn won't remember you. It was so weird and left a field. It just like planted a seed in my head and it never went away.
Gotta love it when that little seed goes in. It just starts planting a little tree.
So weird. What a weird thing to say to someone.
The next sentence is, since having a child, I...
have a whole new perspective on life. It's exactly what you said before. You can't imagine what it's going to be like when you're pregnant or before it's happened to you. You have no idea until it's happened. Your whole perspective and your kind of kaleidoscope view of life just completely shifts and changes. And that is like it actually, if you look through a kaleidoscope and then you change it to change the patterns and the colors, that's what's happening. And it's, I suppose it's a different experience for everyone, but for me personally, it's been love is the only word for it. It's just love. It's just love in an experience, and it's mind-blowing.
And then finally, I'm happy when?
I'm happy when I walk into Bodhi's room in the morning and she looks up at me and she grins with all her stupid teeth and her stupid hair, with her blonde, spiky hair sticking up everywhere, and she goes, ah! And that is my happiest moment of the day, from dawn to dusk.
Chloe, can I just say, for someone who didn't even know if motherhood was for them, you light up. Like, I feel like motherhood has turned you into the Christmas tree that you were talking about. Like, you literally, and I know mums light up when they talk about their kids, but for all the years that I've been doing this, I don't think I've ever seen someone light up so much when they talk about their child and they talk about their role. So thank you so much.
What a compliment. Thank you so much. That means the world to me.
You can go to bed tonight going, Giovanna called me a Christmas tree.
I'm a Christmas tree, bitch. I loved it. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you so, so much. It was a pure delight. Thank you. We have something very exciting to talk about today. Happy mum, happy baby. Well, we are expanding. We're only releasing our very first record. Yes, Move Over McFly, Move Over Tom Fletcher. It's all about Happy Mum, Happy Baby. We're going into music, people. We have teamed up with Decca Records and LifeScore to build a one-stop shop for quality, trustworthy educational music for baby, toddler and parent. Music is such a massive part of our family, and I'm so thrilled with what we've created. I can't wait for you to hear it. Now, it's worth saying that all the sounds on the album, they are played by real instruments and they feature real nature sounds. There is nothing processed. It is all organic. And all of the music aims to be an enjoyable listening experience for both the child and the parent. No plonky plonky piano. It's all just beautiful musicians with their instruments. Honestly, it's a joy to listen to. We all know the number one rule for getting your little one to sleep is to stick to a trusted routine. And my hope with this album is that our creation can be a part of that and make bedtime an easier transition for all. The Ultimate Baby Sleep album is here and it encompasses three parts of baby sleep. And it runs in three sections: wind down, going to sleep, and staying asleep, running seamlessly from top to bottom for the ultimate baby sleep experience. And each section lasts around 30 minutes. So let's delve into each section and tell you what they're about. The wind down is a perfect calming music for bath time and any other pre-bed activity. This encourages special bonding time between parent and baby to prepare for sleep. The melodies I've chosen to feature within the music have a very special place within my own experience of sleep routine. I loved singing little ditties or little lullabies, and this, it's just got that lovely, gentle, melodic feeling to it. The melodies can be easily hummed by parents to capture the bonding power of a parent's voice. And actually, as you listen to the music, you might even catch a few melodies of some traditional classics that would just, ah, they just fill my heart with such love. The next section we have is called Going to Sleep. How we created this was so interesting, and I absolutely loved the recording process to kind of really feel that breath, actually, of the musicians as they were playing. It also features natural sounds, and it entwines the lullabies from the previous wind down to encourage baby to nod off at their own pace and in a relaxed state of mind. Those two sections, they kind of work together and they build. We've found that this is the ideal transition for baby to acknowledge that it is now time to go to sleep. And then the next section, the final section, is during sleep or staying asleep. I like to call it staying asleep because that's the dream, people. But it provides 30 minutes of natural and environmental white noise derived from nature sounds. And then actually this leads into an additional 9.5 hours of natural white noise for babies to prefer continuous white noise once asleep. No waking up in the middle of the night to press a little button on a sheep. Not anymore. There's been so much thought and love poured into these tracks. We've gone through so many different versions. I've pulled on the music that I love, that makes me feel nice and calm. And together with LifeScore and Decca Records, we've really created something that I feel is really magical. I played it to my kids. They love it. I'm so thrilled. Could you imagine they didn't? And actually, I have to say that even as an adult, sitting at my desk and listening to different versions, I have often fallen asleep in the best way, in a very contented way. Some might call it work, some might call it a nice little nap. Either way, I loved it, and it was all because of this album. With 12 hours of continuous music to help your baby sleep through the night, we are so proud to introduce you to Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the Sleep Album. I can't wait for you to hear it and then for you to tell me how you're getting on.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.